What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Hello, and welcome to the Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper. So excited to be talking in the studio. Not my own studio. I'm talking someone else's studio. The studio of my guest. And this man is a very funny guy. He is a very politically engaged and smart guy. He talks about himself as not being smart a lot, but that's just a lie. Put your hands together, ladies and gentlemen, who I can't hear right now, for Jimmy Dore.
Hey, Jimmy!
The host of The Jimmy Dore Show. And you can find him on YouTube and on Patreon and also on the Pacifica networks.
That's right.
On the radio.
Heard nationwide. My show is on the radio nationwide every week on Pacifica. It's heard in WBAI New York, KPFK Los Angeles, and everywhere in between.
He's big time. He's big time on Pacifica.
Thank you.
Some of us just have one city setups like myself. Just WBAI. Katie Halper Show, just WBAI in New York. But, you know, a girl can dream.
Girl can dream.
More Pacifica stations.
We're excited over here at the Jimmy Dore YouTube show because we just cracked 300,000 subscribers. So
wow.
That's nice.
So I wanted to ask you, Jimmy, because you and I always talk about politics on our shows, but I kind of wanted to find out about the personal, where the personal meets the political. And not even in like what made you do that, what did your father do to you or your mother do to you that made you get into politics, but I feel like something happened with the... during the primary, where there was this kind of reckoning, or the red sea of politics, or the blue sea, if we're on the left.
I like it.
Was parted, right?
Yes.
And there was this real kind of division that was always under the surface, but didn't seem as relevant as it now is. And I think it kind of was split open or bubbled up to the surface and exploded. I'm not good at my geology and metaphors, but basically there is some kind of rupture. People were, a lot of people who I assumed were as left as I was, but like me, were just working within the system. I thought that they, once someone like Sanders came out who was politically viable, they'd get excited. But a lot of these people didn't.
I know. It's shocking, right?
Yeah.
And so, shocking.
Yeah. So what was it like? Do you remember, by the way, I can't remember the moment I stopped being... like, I just remember being really pro-Sanders and seeing a lot of the world through the Sanders-Clinton lens. But I can't remember the moment that I got excited about Sanders. Do you remember it?
The moment
you?
I got excited about Sanders? Yeah. I know the moment I got really excited about Sanders. And when he said, Lloyd Blankfein has referred to me as a dangerous man. And he's right. I am dangerous. I'm dangerous for Wall Street. At the problem, I was like, I just came to my feet and I screamed. Yeah.
And he's right. I am dangerous.
Yes! Yeah!
I literally jumped up.
Really?
Literally jumped. I was on air covering it for the Young Turks. And when he said that, we all went nuts.
That's when I met you for the first time. I came on via Skype.
Katie Halper is on WBAI. She's in New York and a super solid progressive and a friend of the show. Katie, welcome to the Young Turks.
Great to be back.
Given what appears to be a very strong win for Hillary Clinton tonight, what do you do in the general election if Hillary Clinton's a candidate?
In New York State, I will vote for Jill Stein, or I'll write in Bernie Sanders.
And that was when people were like, you're like the female Jimmy Dore.
Ha!
Remember that?
Yeah,
and
I do remember
you asked
that.
Me,
when you say if you were in a swing state, you would vote for Hillary Clinton. And what do you say to the people who say, well, if the neoliberals can count on progressive votes at the general election. What is the pressure that's going to make them switch? What is going to make them stop being neoliberal?
Oh, those are good questions.
The idea that voting for Hillary would have made things better. It would have made things a little less worse for a little while, but things would have been way worse in the long run.
Yeah.
Because there would be no chance for Democrats to take over the House or the Senate like they're gonna. There'd be no chance for them to win again the presidency in 2020. Mm-hmm. No chance. So it would have been an even bigger wipeout if there could possibly be.
Right.
And the problem is that the Democrats are going along with the war machine. The Democrats voted for an extra $80 billion a year to the war machine. But those same Democrats told me Bernie was crazy when he right. wanted to give us free college. Right.
That's the thing that is like, I always felt before I used to feel like my politics were to the left of liberals. But I was okay functioning in the world of liberals because it was like, yeah, of course the Dems are too similar to Republicans, but we're not at a point right now where there are real viable, realistic candidates who are challenging doing it any other way, right? Obama sucked on so many levels, but he was the best we could get. Then when Sanders came along, and I don't think he's a perfect person. I don't think he's like immortal or a god.
No, he has flaws.
He has flaws like every other human being, right? But something about seeing how this guy, that there was another way, you know, that slogan, another world is possible, another politician is possible, another candidate is possible. I feel like that was brought out by Sanders, you know, that there was this possibility and that he could catch on. And so that was really like what you were saying before. They're both corporate parties. They're both war parties. I was like, yeah, of course they are. But what are you going to do? And now it's like, no, we know what we can do. And so the fact that there are people who are saying, what are you going to do when there is this alternative who's viable, that to me like shifted everything. And it was no longer kind of out of necessity that we were supporting this two-party system.
First of all, even the unions now think we need a third party. They're already talking about it. The unions are talking about it. The unions, meaning the teacher union, the postal union, right. AFL-CIO. They're talking about, we can't do this anymore. Voting for the lesser of two evils has been screwing us for the last 40 years. If Hillary would have gotten in, she wouldn't have done anything for unions. And that's why half the country doesn't vote. And that's the thing that people don't understand. It's like, they can't think past one goddamn election cycle. They right. still do that thing, well, Hillary would have been better than Trump. Right. Yeah, but you guys have to think past one election cycle. And they refuse to do that.
And that was the problem, is that Hillary would have been better than Trump was their slogan. Hillary yeah. will be better than Trump. And yeah. that doesn't get people out
no.
to vote.
Well, because Hillary already, she already did NAFTA. She already did the Iraq War. She already did Libya. She already pushed the TPP. She already deregulated banks. She already did. People knew who she was. Right. She was horrible and they didn't want her.
Or they kind of knew who she was and they just thought of her as a legacy, or they thought of her as a part of a dynasty, or they thought of her as, I don't understand what she's saying, because she wouldn't ever say anything. No one knew what she was talking about. Like, and that's
she
that's,
said, I'm a progressive who gets things yeah. done. I plead guilty. I'm a moderate. Okay, right. so yeah. you're just a liar.
Yeah, yeah. Which one is it?
That's what we know. Right. What you are, you're a liar.
I love the also like, come on, Bernie and Clinton are basically the same person.
That's what Bill Maher said. You don't
really?
Believe Bill Maher,
well, then,
the great Bill
yeah.
Maher?
Yeah, I know. Seriously, but also like, if they're basically the same person, then why is it better to go with her? What makes her the pragmatist? Like, you could, there's a logic to saying they're the same, so go for the woman, which I'd agree with.
Right.
If they were the same, go for the woman. We should. They were not the same. But what doesn't make sense is go, they're the same, and one of them's the pragmatist. Then they're not the same.
Then they're not the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I was trying to be creative.
So, again, it just boggles my mind.
And,
go ahead.
And you know what I think? That everyone's talking about how much the Russia vote. The Russia meddling influenced our
Russia
the
meddling.
Election, which is because, let's be honest,
meddling means anything.
I know. It's literally, it's like someone pushed me while I was in the voting line.
And I got meddled with.
Yeah. But
they put the meme. They put a meme up on Facebook. They meddled in our election.
They memmeled.
There's
memeled.
A trillion pieces of advertising go up on Facebook.
Yeah.
Two of them from Russian bots.
I think ShareBlue is just upset that the Russian troll farms did what they tried to do, which was influence the election, apparently, because ShareBlue failed at that.
ShareBlue. That's right.
ShareBlue, David Brock's.
And how about Cambridge Analytica, which brags about helping American politicians swing elections?
Cambridge Analytica is financially backed by Robert Mercer, an American computer scientist turned hedge fund billionaire. He also backed the alt-right news site Breitbart, which was headed by Steve Bannon, who was also on the board of Cambridge Analytica until he became Donald Trump's campaign director. Robert Mercer was a major contributor to Donald Trump's presidential campaign, which Cambridge Analytica also worked on.
That was in Forbes.
Right.
Cambridge Analytica, which is a data mining company, which is investor owned by Mercer.
Cambridge Analytica's CEO claims his company never, in fact, did any work on Brexit for any of the campaigns.
Well, I'd like to think we've been pretty clear about this and consistently clear over the last year or so that we had absolutely no involvement in the Leave campaign. We did not do any paid or unpaid work for Brexit.
Why did you initially say you had?
Well, actually, that was really just an example of the cart pulling the horse. We had a slightly overzealous PR advisor who released a press statement.
You also had a colleague at the launch of Leave.eu's campaign.
That's correct, yes.
And but you're still saying that you weren't working for them, you didn't do any work for them.
That's absolutely correct. No, we did
so
no work
at all.
So what
were you doing there?
Well, we were exploring the possibility of working with them, as we were with actually other parties at that time.
Right.
But it's an English company, and they bragged about that they've intervened in 40 United States elections,
exactly.
And they have a 100% track record of winning.
Wow. Well, we should pay Colin, guys. We'll have you on the show.
Cambridge Analytica is sensitive to the charge that they're using military-grade psyops on elections in Western democracies.
We train militaries all over the world in PSYOPs, and our military division is very separate from our political division. In fact, so much so, it's a different company, it's in a different building, it has a firewall between it, it's governed by a different board, it has its own security clearances. So the only commonality between the two might be some key personnel and possibly some shareholders.
Cambridge Analytica went on to work for the Trump campaign. At the time, they appeared to suggest that they were using psychographics, but they later clarified that they hadn't.
Rachel Maddow was like crying about how moved she was that things were finally,
she's fantastic.
People finally care about this stuff.
Finally, for the first time since we realized all this was happening, finally, it feels like somebody is defending us and going after them and taking seriously what they did and showing, not incidentally, showing what this adversary is designed for and capable of and still working on for our election this year. Finally, somebody is defending us and taking it seriously and doing something about it.
She's like, I can't stop talking about this on my show.
After covering this story so closely for this whole freaking year now.
I watch her like I used to watch Phyllis Schlafly on talk shows now.
She's like the Sean Hannity.
She is the Sean Hannity
on
of the left.
Yeah.
She is no doubt about it.
And she said, although she's smarter, which is makes it much more disappointing.
Which is makes it worse.
Yeah, exactly,
Sean Hannity
yeah.
never went to college.
Yeah, he's an idiot. She's a Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah. So she knows better.
So she does this thing about the Russia stuff. And, you know, finally someone, it's like someone cares. Like she's being validated. It's like, you know, we do this stuff all the time. Like you should be, if you're moved to tears about this, then you should be crying every show.
Right.
Because there's some government, there's some like coup, there's some thing that's happening because of the United States intervening. So just be somewhat equal opportunity. Yeah, this is really like all these divisions, you know, I feel like between being a nationalist and an internationalist, a real leftist versus just a kind of lukewarm lib. I feel like the Overton window has shifted, like things have moved, so that being a liberal 8 years ago is no longer acceptable because the possibility is so much greater. There's so much more to be done on the left. So much has opened up.
Because of Bernie, you think?
Yeah, because of Bernie. And it's not just him. I think it takes a spark, right? That's the other thing that sometimes annoys me. People are like, it's not about Bernie, it's a movement. Yeah, of course. But you want to reinvent the wheel? History moves through leaders. Like,
right.
We could try to work on society so that doesn't happen. In the meantime, what are we going to do? Be like sitting in a drum circle, like taking consensus. In the meantime, a right winger like Trump is just appealing to the fact that people like leaders. I'm kind of bored with that argument. It's like Bernie shaming. Like, I know he's flawed. He also happens to be very charismatic. And it's also very out of touch and kind of like elitist also. It's very intellectual and academic.
It's about a movement and not
yeah,
about
yeah. And they're
so
trying
any reason to get rid of.
But, yeah.
So Howard Dean is now going on saying, "Hey, I like Bernie. We need a young progressive." No. And then he goes, "Joe Kennedy." That's not a progressive.
Wait a second, Joe Kennedy. Okay, I was on SE Cup because, again,
you did SE Cup show on CNN?
Yeah.
Oh, you should tell me. I would have watched.
I'll send you the clip.
Okay.
Because
what
happens is,
how'd it go?
It was pretty good. I had a rough moment at the beginning because I felt like it was a weird experience. But then once we started talking about Joe Kennedy.
First, guys, let's talk about Joe Kennedy.
She's like, Katie, was he the right person to make this speech?
Katie, was he the right person to give this response? Putting aside the substance of what he said.
I was like, State of the Union.
No.
No, I would have to
Why
go
not,
on,
Katie?
On a limb and say no. He represents a lot of the things that people find alienating and unappealing about the Democrats. He's a part of a political dynasty. Mm-hmm. I have to say, this is totally superficial, but I mean, the schmutz on, the thing on his mouth,
it
I don't know what that
superficial.
Was.
Superficial. I could not get by the creepy
and
troll.
And yeah,
he said
and
it
also,
was chapstick.
Like,
that's
you know,
a lot of chapstick.
The Kennedys, they're, you know, they have a nice faces often. So I think that's the least that we could ask from him.
Well,
but he's also anti-single. He's like, he's so centrist. He's for the war on drugs. He's anti-single payer. He's so status quo, and he just seems like such a political insider. And what did 2016 teach us, if not that people want change?
Yeah, no, I agree.
He's literally the opposite of what the takeaway from 2016 should have been.
He's the
right?
Everything checks every wrong box.
Yeah,
he's a trust fund baby.
Exactly.
He's literally a trust fund baby.
And he doesn't even have, I thought at least they would like choose someone who wasn't a straight white man because that's so important to them.
Red hair
on
top of it. Couldn't be whiter.
He's a ginger, though. In all fairness, that makes him a minority.
Oh, that's
he's
right.
He's a person of hair color.
Oh, that's right. He's
P-O-H-C.
A persecuted Kennedy ginger.
Yeah, he's a persecuted Kennedy ginger, yeah.
So,
But it's just like...
He's the Bobby Jindal of the Kennedy family, by the way. He's
kind
so
of is,
not
right?
liberal. He's so...
He's just not... Yeah, and this stuff on like single payer and...
He promises a healthcare system that shows mercy. How about just single payer? No mercy involved.
Right.
Don't
just,
need
just,
any,
justice.
I don't
How
need your
justice?
Good feelings.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't need your pity. I don't need your empathy. You know what I need? Fucking single payer.
Yeah. Justice versus empathy. Justice versus charity. That is a big difference between liberal and left. And I'm using liberal as the stuff we don't like and left as the stuff that we like and are. And it's the sense
I'm coming
of justice
to despise
versus
liberals.
Oh, wait. You don't... I have to be careful about the way I say this because not everyone gets the terminology.
A difference between a liberal and a progressive.
But I hate libs. Like, my friend and I were always texting each other, like, effing libs, fucking libs,
like, Hillary
whatever.
Clinton supporters are liberals.
Yeah. They're libs. Yeah.
They're libs. And they, as Phil Oak said, they're 10% to the left in the best of times, and they're 10% to the right of center when it affects them personally.
Mm, yeah.
In every American community, you have varying shades of political opinion. One of the shadiest of these is the liberals. An outspoken group on many subjects. 10 degrees to the left of center in good times. 10 degrees to the right of center if it affects them personally. So here then is a lesson in safe logic.
I cried when they shot Medgar Evers. Tears ran down my spine. And I cried when they shot Mr. Kennedy, as though I'd lost a father of mine. But Malcolm X got what was coming. He got what he asked for this time. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. Get it? I go to civil rights rallies, and I put down the old D.A.R. D.A.R., that's the Dykes of the American Revolution. I love Harry and Sidney and Sammy. I hope every colored boy becomes a star. But don't talk about revolution. That's going a little bit too far. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. I cheered when Humphrey was chosen, my faith in the system restored. And I'm glad that the commies were thrown out from the AFL-CIO bar. And I love Puerto Ricans and Negroes as long as they don't move next door. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. are the people of old Mississippi should all hang their heads in shame. Now I can't understand how their minds work. What's the matter? Don't they watch Les Crane? But if you ask me to bus my children, I hope the cops take down your name. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. Yes, I read New Republic and Nation. I've learned to take every view. You know, I've memorized Lerner and Golden. I feel like I'm almost a Jew. But when it comes to times like Korea, there's no one more red, white, and blue. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. I vote for the Democratic Party. They want the UN to be strong. I attend all the Pete Seeger concerts. He sure gets me singing those songs. And I'll send all the money you ask for, but don't ask me to come on along. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. Sure, once I was young and impulsive. I wore every conceivable pin. Even went to socialist meetings. Learned all the old union hymns. Ah, but I've grown older and wiser. And that's why I'm turning you in. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal.
There is there's also a term, it's somewhat comparable. It's called PEP, progressive except on Palestine. And you see that with some progressive Jews who are, you know, great on every other national liberation struggle, great
Don't
on every other
issue. Don't you find that funny? Like, there's guys who, like, consider themselves doing lefty news shows like this or like mine or like your, and they're like anti-Palestine. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it makes sense. It's like,
so you're not, to me, it's like, if you're pushing Russiagate, and you're against Palestine, you might think you're progressive,
right,
but you are not. You are a right winger.
We should do a, you might be a neo-lib if we should do, like, instead of.
You might be a redneck. If you've ever been accused of lying through your tooth, you might be a redneck. If your son's name is Dale Jr., and your name's not Dale.
You know you're a neo-lib if.
So you're a neo-liberal. You're not a lefty. Yeah. You're not progressive. There's no way in hell that you can be against Palestine and consider yourself a progressive. There's no way in hell you can push Russiagate and consider yourself a progressive. You might consider yourself that, but you're not.
Right, you're not based around.
It's like literally you couldn't push McCarthyism in the 50s and say you're a goddamn progressive.
Right.
You're doing the same thing now. You're not progressive. The best I can say is that you're a useful idiot.
Mm-hmm. No, that's what they say we are, right? We're all Putinist bots.
Right.
The irony is that this is another weird parallel with Israel stuff. Like, with, let's say that you and I are not proud Dems. We're not like blue before all else, like these ridiculous things that people have when they identify as Dems. But the irony is that, like, the stuff that people like you and me think are that position, like moving, getting more independents to join the party or having more open primaries or just having someone like Sanders, all of that is good for the Democratic Party.
Yes.
We just don't care about labels per se, but it is better. The people who are obsessed with being Democrats, they have this like baggage, so they can't even see it clearly. So their positions are actually not good for the Democratic Party. So I'm like, hey, it's your party. Do whatever you want to do. Just know that you're going to be screwing your party and the rest of the world and the country and the rest of the world because of how the U.S. operates. So it's kind of similar with Israel. I'm Jewish. I don't want them using my name and my ethnicity, my people, to justify abusing Palestinians. I'm not rah-rah, go team Israel at all. But people who are more dovish and less hawkish on Israel are much better for Israel's existence than the people who are like, go team, go Israel, rah-rah, do whatever you want. Because they're just signing Israel's death sentence, either death sentence or real apartheid, which I guess they prefer to Israel not existing anymore. But they're the ones who are making the two-state solution not possible because they're cutting up the
country.
Well,
they don't want that. It's obvious they don't. It's obvious that Netanyahu does not want that.
Oh, yeah, he's awful. He's so bad. There's a guy named Tony Judt who died, who was a historian, who thought that Netanyahu's election would be good because Jews who were PEPs, progressives except on Palestine, those types, he didn't use that word, but he was saying people who are progressive but not as good on Israel, they'd be too embarrassed
to go along with Netanyahu.
That he's such a right winger, yeah, that they could know, but he was wrong.
He's very wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't claim to be knowledgeable about all the intricacies of the Palestinian situation, but as a progressive, when I assess a situation, I'm always sensitive to who has the power in that situation. And whoever has the power in that situation, the onus of being moral.
Yeah.
Now you have the power, so now you have to act morally. Israel has all the power, even though they say, oh, look, the Palestinians are lobbing missiles against your Iron Dome.
Yeah.
And so, and then when you go and you bomb open air prison, that's a war crime.
Yeah.
So that's an atrocity, and you should be held accountable for that. They never will.
And they also point to themselves, and we, the United States, point to them as a beacon of democracy. That's the other thing.
Right.
You can't say you're the beacon on a hill of...
It's apartheid's goddamn state. Yeah. John Kerry said that.
I know. Hillary herself called it an occupation in her book.
Really?
And then during the Dem platform committee meetings, one of the things they fought about was whether to call an occupation. They wouldn't. They refused to do it.
So she has a public position and another position.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sure, right. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's both exciting and depressing. Because what's exciting is that, like, I used to be kind of an annoying, more of a, I was always leftist, but I was in the liberal world. And I did have that contempt, I'm really embarrassed by it, kind of contempt and disdain for people who weren't already woke. Like, if you're not for same-sex marriage, then forget it. You're a bigot. It's like, first of all, that doesn't help. Like, the way you pass same-sex marriage is you reach out and you talk to people. And we know that. That's how they did it in Maryland, right? It was basically the black churchgoers who were convinced. Now, to be fair, they're not like rabid right-wing evangelicals, but they didn't embrace same-sex marriage. They didn't oppose it with the same fervor that right-wing evangelicals do. But you have to reach out to people and speak to them. And I feel like libs hate leftists and hate undereducated, like, not yet woke people more than they hate kind of socially liberal right-wingers. Like, people like Wall Street types who don't care about poor people, they're kind of okay with them. Like, if you believe in same-sex marriage, but you want poor people to die on the streets.
Well, that's neoliberalism.
Yeah, you may be neoliberal.
It's all this identity politics, and I'm for this and that, but I'm not for economic policies that support you.
Right.
I'm for, you know, lip service that supports you. I'm for you having access to things.
Oh, access, right.
I'm for you having the same amount of rights, but I'm not about you having actual equality.
Right. You don't want any, exactly.
Talk about the class issue.
Right.
So that's what they leave out of all that. Right. And that's the most important thing. You know what makes, everybody has said this, right? So what makes a country or a people ripe for a right-wing demagogue, right?
Yes.
Is when nothing's working in their country, when the government has let them down. So when you have two parties are pro-management and nobody's representing the workers, then a right-wing demagogue comes along who says, here's the problem. The problem's Mexicans.
Yeah,
I'm going to build a wall and fix it. You're going to get your coal jobs back. I'm going to do better deals. These TPP sucks. We're going to repeal it. It says everything. It was like, whoa, I'll vote for that. So that's what makes, but if the Democrats had been doing their frickin' job, if Barack Obama would have put on a soft shoe and went and marched with those teachers in Wisconsin, if he would have stood up with Wall Street, the Occupy Wall Street, and actually regulated the banks and made them smaller instead of making them bigger, if he would have actually taken those two wars, ended them, and got us out of the goddamn Middle East. So this, if he would have actually passed free college for people. So this is what makes people ripe for a guy like Donald Trump, because their lives are miserable. People are treading water. GoFundMe, the biggest thing on GoFundMe is medical. Healthcare, yeah. It's unbelievable. Terrible, and that's the country we live in. We go, I don't understand how Trump got president. What are you, a fucking moron? Yeah. No, you're a neoliberal, and you're paid to ignore the causes of Trump.
And you're that's attached. Why. You've no attachment. You've no, you don't have any access. Talk about access, right? You're totally cut off. You have no idea what most people experience or live, and you don't really care. That's the other thing.
They don't care. You think Palmieri cares? No. Jennifer Palmieri was Hillary Clinton's communications director. She was interviewed the day after the Women's March, the first one where there was some billion people. Yeah. She said, don't be mistaken. That doesn't mean they're for $15 minimum wage.
You are wrong to look at these crowds and think that means everyone wants $15 an hour.
Don't assume that
the answer to big crowds is moving policy to the left. I think the answer to the big crowds is engaging as much as you can to be as supportive as you can and understanding. I mean, what these people want, they are desperate. It's all about identity on our side now. Mm. They want to show he does not support me. I support you, refugee. I support you, immigrant in my neighborhood. Mm. I want to defend you.
Just about not shopping at Nordstrom's. That's the resistance for her.
Women who are rejecting Nordstrom's and Neiman Marcus are saying this is power for them. Donald Trump doesn't take me seriously. Okay. Well, like, I'm showing you my value and my power. And I think it's like our own version of identity politics on the left that's more empowering. And I think that's a safer place to be.
All right. We shall see. Jennifer Palmieri.
And it's an amazing, this is a study. They will write books about this, about how propaganda works.
You know what else I find so infuriating is the idea that, look, Sanders, what makes someone like Sanders so great is that, Jimmy's getting a can you grab me one too, please? He's getting a Pellegrino or something. Perrier, as Jimmy and I pretend to be salt of the earth, in touch with the workers. Just kidding. But we're drinking a Perrier. You got to stay hydrated for the revolution because we're getting so worked up. So Jimmy just grabs him. Let's pretend it's seltzer. Jimmy grabs some seltzer.
I grab a seltzer.
A seltzer, yeah. But, you know, what's cool is that it makes someone an effective politician and organizer when they can appeal to people across party lines. I don't know if you notice this. People who hate Sanders point out, like, oh, he opposes the TPP. So does Donald Trump. They're the same.
Ah!
It's like, you know who else opposes the TPP? Every organization you support, like NOW, National Organization of Women, Sierra Club, Doctors Without Borders, you think they're Trumpists also? And this idea that you can't reach out to people who aren't already with you, that's just not how you win elections. Well, there are people who I think we should be trying to work with who can be transformed. You know what's really interesting is that guy who's working with Reverend, I want to have Barber, William Barber. Have you seen this guy, a white guy who worked for Trent Lott? Strom Thurmond, Trent Lott, both of them, he worked for one of those segregationists.
I want to ask you, Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove, about your life story. Mm. I mean, for young people, they may not have even heard of Strom Thurmond, one of the longest-serving senators in U.S. history, also ran for president on a segregationist platform. What was your involvement with him?
Well, that was 1948, and I was born in 1980, so I wasn't, you know, very aware of that either growing up.
And he's white, and he's a Christian guy.
I grew up in a Southern Baptist culture that told us, you know, if you're faithful, you're Republican. And I wanted to do all that I could for Jesus, so I was trying to make it to the White House, and Jesse Helms referred me to Strom Thurmond, and that's how I ended up in his office. But when I got there, I began to realize that something wasn't quite right in terms of these values that I was taught of love and justice and concern for the community and what was happening there, which was really about holding on to power. And I began to realize, you know, what Reverend Barber was saying, that my people in North Carolina and in the South had really been duped, that we were told that this was good for us and good for America and good for the world. And as a matter of fact, they were using religion to serve this white supremacist agenda that really wasn't very different from what he had advocated in 48 or in the 50s and the 60s, but had changed its language a bit. And so I was very grateful for Reverend Barber teaching me that freedom movement history, beginning to realize that there really has been a movement that has pushed for an inclusive democracy in this country since the 19th century, and that effort to reconstruct this country is also very faith-rooted, and we connected because of our faith and began to realize that there were some faith leaders who were using that faith to serve the agenda of this really white supremacy.
And he, had an awakening.
Did you understand this when you were a page for Senator Thurmond?
No, I was very confused. That's why I needed a teacher like Dr. Barber here.
So he and William Barber go around and are doing this poor people's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And those stories are really interesting, I think, of how people are converted, politically converted. And I think people just really resent that. But that's how that's how you organize. Again, it's so weird. It's just who do you there's this guy you should have on your show called Arish Singh. He's a comedian. He's Sikh. And he wears a turban. So he walks down the street and he's seen as a threat by racists, right? Mm-hmm. Easy to target. And he said that he doesn't like it, when some white lib says it's not says something white coal miners are racist. He's like, that doesn't help me when white liberals turn their backs on these people. Who do you think pays the price for that?
Right.
It's not it is the white racist coal miner who pays the price to some extent, but it's also Arish, someone like that. So all these white allies, if they actually want to help defeat racism, part of that is doing the work and talking to people who don't already agree with us and saying, hey, you know what? You know, they want you to blame. Trump wants you to blame Muslims and Mexicans. They're not actually the ones who you should be angry at. But that is we're not allowed to do that because actually organizing or talking to people who aren't already with us is not okay.
This is why I don't call myself a liberal.
I know.
Mother Jones is just a garbage rag.
What about,
I saw that jagoff from Mother Jones.
Oh, Shane Barry, yeah.
Yeah, that guy is
the worst.
What a CIA tool that guy is. If you want any more proof that the CIA still infiltrates lefty organizations, look at Clara Jeffrey and that.
Oh,
what's his name? Shane what?
Shane Bauer.
What a fucking tool.
Yeah, he
that
said about Rania.
Blatant tool, that guy. One eye closed, drunk, I can see who that guy is. It doesn't, I don't have to lay out some sophisticated argument. All you have to do is look at one of his fucking tweets, for heaven's sake.
And he also told
how smart Mother Jones is just a garbage rat.
Well, what about
right now?
The one Kevin Drum?
Yeah, Kevin Drum
about homeless people.
I don't know what did he say.
Oh,
I missed that
amazing.
One.
I'll find it for you. Clara Jeffries.
These people are dregs. These people are opposite of progressives.
I know.
Clara Jeffries.
Are people
Shane
disgusted by the homeless? Was his hot take from July?
What?
Yeah. Are people disgusted by the homeless by Kevin Drum?
What?
Yeah.
Are people disgusted by people with no money and no power?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Listen to this. Ready? He cites an article. He goes, a pair of researchers conducted a survey on homelessness and claimed to have been surprised at the results. Quote, and then he quotes the article. We uncovered a strange pattern. On one hand, majority support both aid, 60%, and subsidized housing, 65%, with only a small percentage opposing these policies. On the other, a majority supports banning panhandling, and a plurality supports banning sleeping in public, while only about a quarter
of the
public... Where
the fuck are you supposed to sleep if you're
homeless?
...opposes
these policies.
You're supposed to stand up?
So this is what Kevin Drum writes in response to this. This does not seem strange to me at all. Most people don't like being accosted by panhandlers and don't like their park benches being taken over by potentially dangerous vagrants.
What?
Yeah.
So, yes, let's demonize the poorest people, the people who are the most marginalized in our society. Are you kidding
me?
Yeah,
he also he blames Bernie for everything. He's really bad.
Do you need any fucking more? Do you really not think that come on.
Yeah, he hates Sanders so much. Yeah, there's a good response to this in these times. I was actually reprinted with permission from Knock LA. There's nothing okay about Kevin Drum's disgust for the homeless. The Mother Jones column is a case study in how liberals insulate themselves from the psychological and material effects of injustice. Hey, well said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, he's a... It's pretty scary how... The libs are now more open, though, about their despicable views.
Their disdain for for the poor?
Yeah. Anyway.
I don't even know what kind of world we're living in, You turn on MSNBC.
My God.
They now are the mirror image of Fox News.
Except they're more boring than Fox News.
Oh, way more
Fox
boring.
Fox News had this thing. I mean, I hate Fox News, obviously, But they had this debate between, like, and it's fake because it's all shifted totally right into the fascist state. But they had a debate between Gorka, who's so scary and seems like an actor impersonating himself, but he's real. Gorka and Geraldo Rivera. And they were talking about whether or not teachers should be armed.
Oh, boy.
And Rivera was like, no, they shouldn't be. And Gorka was like, yes, they should be. But on MSNBC,
even Geraldo Rivera gets it right.
I know. That's
what I'm
saying.
Even Geraldo Rivera gets that right.
But you know what? All they talk about on MSNBC, of course, they couldn't afford to talk about that because there have been more important things to talk about. Like
Russia,
yeah.
So let me just tell you about, let me just talk about the arming teachers. So here's what's going to happen when they arm teachers.
Yeah.
Teachers are going to shoot students. That is going to happen. There is no doubt. Have you ever been in school and a teacher freaked out? Yeah, we all know those unstable teachers. By the way, yesterday I reported it on this show. NBC News reported it. There was a teacher freaked out at school, barricaded himself in his room with a gun. With a gun. Freaking out in a school with a gun. Could there be anything better? The principal has a key to the door, tries to get in, he shoots.
Yeah, we need these people armed.
He shoots. They say he wasn't shooting at anybody. I don't know how you can ascertain that from the other side of a door. So,
well, it's funny because when Marissa Alexander shot at a door to keep away her abusive husband, do you know the case I'm talking about? Anyway, she was sentenced to jail time.
She was sentenced
to
20 years. So what else is going to happen is that black kids will be shot.
Of course, yeah.
Black kids will be shot.
Especially in stand your ground states.
That black kids will be shot and the teacher will say, I feared for my life. And they will say he was going for the gun. They will say all
that
stuff.
Well, that's a bonus for these people who want teachers to be armed, that black kids will be shot.
Can you imagine going to school knowing your teacher's is fucking like untethered, right?
Yeah.
And is in crisis. And then you know they have a gun on them. And now go learn. Go learn.
That's a calming environment. No,
right?
No stress or tension. Yeah. No, it's
and you know what else is going to happen is kids are going to get a hold of those fucking guns.
Right.
Kids are going to get a hold of those guns. There is no fucking doubt in my mind.
Right.
My dad was a cop. He kept his gun locked up. We got it.
Really?
Yes.
I want to hear. Actually, I want to ask you about this stuff. Yeah. Well. And the other thing is, I love these ideas that, like, oh, if only people had been armed in that movie theater. Yeah, a shootout in a movie theater.
They
definitely would have been able to isolate the bad guy and shoot just him.
So
and
when
not
you see
10
guys shooting,
people.
You don't know which is the guy shooting. Now everybody starts shooting each other.
Yeah, great. At least,
it's in a dark movie theater.
Yeah,
everybody
I can't believe
shooting.
It. And they really wanted that. They
what
used that
wrong?
Example. What was that, in Arizona?
That was in Colorado.
In Colorado. And they used that as an example, yet another example of why we need to...
There was a lot of good guys with guns at that Florida school. Turns out none of them went in.
Yeah, what was that?
The cops didn't go
in?
The
only time in Israel, the only time you hear Israel criticized on Fox News or any media, but the guy's last name is Israel, the sheriff. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
So yeah, the school safety officer had a gun. He didn't go in. There was three other sheriffs that reported stood by their cars and did not go in.
They were just afraid of
the local police went right in when they got there. The Coral Springs Police, I think was it called. They went right in.
So what's it like having a cop as a dad? Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, I think my dad he wasn't a gung-ho cop, right? So there's a couple different kinds of cops. There's the bullies. There's cops who were bullies, and they can't wait to be cops. And then there was the people who were bullied as kids, and they can't wait to become cops too, right? So it's all this, I want power. But then there's that third kind that's the best job they could get with their level of education, and they need insurance. So that was my dad. My dad didn't go to college, and he had all these kids. He was Catholic. So here he was, like, 22-year-old with, like, six kids already.
Really?
Because he started banging when he was 18 years old, right? So he's got all these kids, and he's married, and he's got to support him. So he takes the job. He was driving a pretzel truck, and then he got a job as a cop. Because my grandpa was a cop, too. My grandpa
was a cop.
What
genre was he?
My grandpa?
Like, yeah, you know, you were saying there are three different, you know, people.
I think my grandpa was the bully kind.
Okay.
And my dad, I don't know if I would say he wasn't a bully to other people. He was just a bully to his kids.
Right. That's nice. Could have been worse.
Could have been worse. I always wanted to be the kid next door. He was nice to he saw all the good qualities in everyone else, and he only saw the negative qualities in his kids. That's my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just projection, right? Because you're right. Like, well, this kid came from me, and I freaking think I'm a piece of shit.
Right.
So he must also be a piece of shit. And that's my dad's thinking, and he never broke out of it, and he's still alive.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
So you could have, like, a session together or something.
No.
No.
My dad, are you fucking kidding me?
Do you guys keep
my dad
are
doesn't
you in
read
touch?
Books. There isn't a book in my dad's house.
Are you in touch?
Well, I grew up in my parents' house. We had a bar in our basement. We did not have a bookshelf in our entire house. And I remember when I realized this, I started doing these.
You met your first Jewish friend and you realized?
Yes. I started writing three pages longhand every day, stream of consciousness. And I realized I didn't have a fucking bookshelf in my house growing up. And I called my mom and I go, Mom, we didn't have a bookshelf.
Oh, you mean you recently did this, what, The Artist's Way?
Is yeah.
That what
it so is? This is like maybe 15, 20 years ago I started doing The Artist's Way.
Which one of the things they have you do is something called Morning Pages.
Morning, you just write stream of consciousness.
Really
it's like a meditation. It kind of clears
good.
Your mind anyway. And I realized doing that I called my mom and I said, Mom, we didn't have a bookshelf in our house. She goes, of course we did. I go, where? Where was the bookshelf with the book? She goes, we had a bookshelf in the closet in the basement. And that's where we kept the popular science magazines. That's a quote. That's a quote from my mom. And she didn't realize how funny that was. They don't realize it.
Right.
So my parents didn't read books. And,
how many of you were there, kids?
12.
Oh, my gosh. That's a lot.
That's a lot of kids. People say you learn a lot about life growing up in a big family. And I said, I guess the biggest thing I learned is I'm easily replaced. Like, I knew if I died, it wasn't going to put a big dent in their plans, Katie. I can't imagine my mom sitting around, oh, no, Jimmy's dead. What am I going to do now with just the 11 of you?
Right.
Oh, how do you fill the empty 1/12 of your heart?
Did you feel like, how old was your mom when she had her first and last kid?
I don't even know. I don't have my dad. It's a long story. Okay. My dad got married, had 4 kids. His wife died. Then he married my mom.
Okay, so she
only 6 months later after his wife died. Married my mom 6 months later. My mom walked into a house with 4 kids.
And then she had.
And then she had
eight
kids. One died right after birth. Her first kid died after birth. And then she had 7 more kids. Six more kids, and then she adopted 2 after I was in school. So I go to school. We got 10 kids in our family.
Yes, you were replaceable.
Yeah,
in a different way.
Very replaceable. So I go to school, and my mom doesn't know what to do with herself all day because all her kids are in school now all day, and she doesn't know what to do with herself. And so she goes to Catholic Charities, and she says, "I want a baby. Can I have a baby?" Because they do foster kids, right? And they go, we don't have a baby, but we have a third grader. I was in second grade. They go, we have the third grader. So I got Eddie Martinez. This Puerto Rican guy came home, and he was tough as fucking nails and built like a brick shit house. And that's what I'm like, that's what I need, Mom. Another fucking guy who can beat my ass in my house. Everybody can beat my ass in this house. You go get another guy to beat my ass in this house? Fucking goddamn it. And she did that to, she goes, I did that to get in good with the Catholic Charity, so maybe they'll give me a baby. And I got to tell you, it fucking worked. She got a baby.
Wow.
She got a baby that was 6 weeks old, and that was my little sister, Dee. And I was really glad to have a little sister. I certainly didn't need another older fucking brother.
So you were how old when she got the foster kid?
I was in maybe third grade,
and the foster
grade,
kid was in?
Fourth grade, maybe. She was six weeks old.
So, okay.
So my older brother was a year. I was in second grade when we got him.
Yeah,
he was in third.
Okay.
And then we got the baby maybe when I was in fourth, so 2 years later maybe.
And how long did he stay with you guys?
Forever. They never left.
Your older brother never
left. Yeah, my older brother never left. Eddie? No. I mean, I met his family. His parents were alive and everything.
Wow.
I don't. But they were poor or whatever. But they weren't that poor. I mean, I would go to visit his sister. I mean, they were just regular poor. It wasn't like... His dad even had owned a car, right? It was kind of a nice car.
He just wanted to do like a cultural exchange.
But I don't know what was happening. So
abroad.
I don't really know what... I don't know why. What led... What,
maybe your mom just paid him. She was like, pretend that you need adoption. They'll look
maybe.
Upon me.
I don't know how he got into the system of foster... But he got into it, and he ended up at our house.
So what were you in the lineup of kids? Where were you, I mean?
I'm the youngest boy. So out of 7 boys, I'm the youngest. And there's 5 girls, and I have, and they're all older than me, except my one little sister, who we got when she was 6 weeks old.
Was adopted.
Yeah.
Dee.
Her name is Dolores. We call her Dee Dee.
Are you guys close?
We were close up until just a few years ago. Then my family fell apart.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know, we're adult children of alcoholics, my parents. And my dad had, you know, they have rage issues and shit. And so they never worked that out. My dad was, I do a joke about it. I said, my dad was what they call a dry drunk, right? So he didn't drink at all because my grandpa was an alcoholic. And so my dad's thing was he wasn't going to drink at all, but he didn't go to meetings. You know, he didn't go to like AA. He didn't get fixed. He just stopped drinking, which what they call that is a dry drunk. So the joke part, as I say,
but that's true. That's a real thing.
That's a real thing. That's a thing they call the dry drunk. Because what he still had all the anger and rage of an alcoholic, but we never got to enjoy any of the fun drunk times.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So my dad had two emotions, angry and not angry yet.
Oh, nice.
Those are my dad's
That's
two emotions.
Right.
My dad was not a fun-loving, happy guy. I'm convinced that a lot of alcoholics, they have this thing. I think the more term is...
To hear our entire interview with Jimmy Dore, go to patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. You can find Jimmy Dore's show on YouTube, Patreon. You can find him on Twitter at Jimmy Dore.
Jimmy_Dore.
Oh, sorry.
I have a blue check, so the other Jimmy Dore, you know he's not right.
You and I both got blue
checks.
They
don't give out blue checks anymore, I heard.
Oh, really? We got in right in time.
Somebody told me that.
Yeah. And so we will see you next week. Make sure you go to Patreon for the rest of this episode. Thanks. Bye.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.